the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show.
I'm Sean.
I'm Jen. And today on Signal Boost Conversations, we'll be talking about how you, too, can be a New York Times bestselling author.
Also, why you can only write when you're under the age of 30, if you're a woman, plus military SF. That, by the way, was troll. That was a troll language I've been practicing.
Oh, I'm glad. That's very important on today's internet.
Yes.
So first, before we get started, we need to thank a couple of Patreon patrons who have pledged their support since the last time we did this. So thank you to Carrie Duvall the Divine and Matthew Kavanaugh the Magnificent. Those are both tongue twisters.
You wrote them.
Damn it. I know. I wrote them specifically to be alliterative, and now I can't say them. So this is all my fault. But thank you so much for helping us reach our first goal. We finally get a new webpage. Yay!
Yep. So we're building it right now out of books. So expect pictures of the new fortress made out of books.
We're Luddites.
Yes. So that's exciting. You can also help us reach our next goal, which will involve a Patreon-only podcast. And you can do that by joining, by going to skiffyandfanty.com and going to that Patreon button, or going patreon.com/skiffyandfanty.
Yay!
And then giving all of your money and your firstborn children.
That seems a bit much. Are you planning on taking care of their firstborn children? Because I'm not.
There's a reason I'm practicing troll right now. Yeah, we've got a gang of trolls who'll take care of them. It's fine.
Which reminds me of a really good show on Netflix, which is the one about trolls done by Guillermo del Toro. And it's a fantastic cartoon. And you should watch it. But that has absolutely nothing to do with our conversation today.
No, it really doesn't. We're going to talk about some very, very, very recent controversies, and one that, oddly enough, today feels like it's now years old, given the other controversies that just piled on top.
Yeah. So what's our first one?
Well, first topic is we're going to talk about the infamous book Handbook for Mortals by Lani Sarem, if I've gotten that correct. I think most people have heard about this, at least vaguely, and if you haven't, you're in for a treat, because essentially what happened was Lani Sarem's book, Handbook for Mortals, mysteriously appeared on the bestseller list, despite many people not knowing it even existed yet, and it coming from a very small publisher, from a website not known for publishing any work. And when there was more investigation conducted, it was discovered there were irregularities, specifically involving maybe the same person or multiple people, it's unclear, calling multiple bookstores, asking whether they reported their sales numbers to the New York Times, and then putting in bulk orders. And this sort of all fell down within the same day. It was found out that this is not how you're supposed to do things, apparently, and New York Times pulled it from the list, and now we're on day two when we're recording this, and there's a lot of other crazy crap that keeps going on, such as learning more about who Lani Sarem is. A lot of people have been talking about the writing online, which is not very good, I think is fair to say. And apparently, other bands who Lani Sarem has been a manager for have come out and said some things about Lani Sarem's tactics, so that's fun. So it's just been like, you know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, why would you do this? I don't understand.
I think, though, one of the things for me that this shows is how easy it is to game the system because clearly we are hearing about this because they're idiots and they didn't drum up enough support or send out enough or any arcs prior to this. There was no buzz, right? So part of the reason that this was discovered was because literally nobody had heard about it in the YA community, at least. And the YA community is pretty, I mean, they've got their finger on the pulse of YA. They know what's going on. And the guy who initially raised the doubts, Phil Stamper, he is a publisher. So these are the people that kind of know what's going on, and yet nobody had heard of it. So what really concerns me is this the first time?
No.
Now, her publisher, they're a brand new imprint. It's Geek Nation, and, you know, they're like an online magazine or something like that about geeky stuff. I don't care.
Like a podcast entertainment commentary type website. They've been around for a while. I hadn't really heard of them, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? They could have their own sort of niche, right? And they basically, this is their debut published work, which, you know, fine.
That's fine.
It was until today.
And I can expect that a brand new publishing company that is otherwise, you know, not necessarily connected to the publishing world might not know sort of the other steps to take to boost buzz about a new book, theoretically. Although, I mean, they're a pretty big website. They should probably know. But anyway.
Well, if you don't, I mean, it could be tough. Like, if you don't really work in the publishing world, you might not really understand much about book marketing. It's certainly the case they don't know a lot about the YA market, because even Lani Sarem has said that they didn't try to advertise the book in terms of, like, going to events and things like that through the YA community. They mostly went through, like, the kind of standard Comic-Con style community. Although not specifically, it didn't seem that they went to actual Comic-Con, but that sort of community, that sort of broad community, which also fine, but it's just not maybe your, I don't know, it just seems like for a YA book that maybe isn't your where you want to start things. But then again, whatever, different strategies. If it works, it works. Just didn't.
Right. And that's kind of the problem that I'm having here, is that the only reason they were caught is because they didn't take those steps to generate the buzz, right?
Sorta.
So when somebody was like, wait, I've never heard of this, they started digging into it. I'm a little bit worried that this is not the first time this has happened. And clearly people know what bookstores to go to bulk order books.
Well, they didn't know. They had to call to find them. Because that information, I guess, is not, well, if it's publicly available, it's not something that's just easy to find. But they had to call bookstores to ask if they reported their numbers and then ordered bulk, which is, I think, the thing that, like, put the nail in the coffin, as it were. Because when Stamper started getting DMs from booksellers, because he's a publisher, so of course he knows book people, he was getting people literally saying, yeah, this weirdness happened, and I thought that it sounded suspicious, but there wasn't any way for them, like an individual bookseller, to necessarily know. Because what they were doing was saying, we've got an event coming up. We want to order a whole bunch of books for the event. We don't really care if they're in store now. We just want to order them so that they're available for the event, which is like, okay. I mean, you know, a lot of times people will do stuff like that. We're going to order for an event. Except in this case, it turns out that it was people associated with Lani Sarem doing it, which is different than, say, like a school being like, I want to order from a bookstore. And this is what never made any sense. It's like, if that's the case, if what you're doing is you're bulk ordering because you want to hold an event, like do giveaways or sell at an event or something, whatever, right? There are like two ways you do that. You either get in touch with the bookseller as the author or the publisher and have them actually send a representative to hand sell them at your event, or you go to the publisher and you either order in bulk and get at the wholesale cost so that you can do them at a convention, or something like that. Now, again, I'm not a publisher, so there are probably, like, other ways you can do it. It just, it makes no sense. Their excuses don't seem to hold up. You don't call in and order, like, thousands of copies of a book and then be like, oh yeah, it's for an event in the future, during the week when it released.
Right? So take note, people who want to end up on the New York Times bestseller list, don't be these guys.
Yeah. And apparently it happens. It can happen. The systems like Nielsen's book ratings and MYT have systems in place to sort of catch people who are trying to game. But like on occasion, you can find ways around it. But even in this case, like they didn't get away with it.
No, thank goodness.
Yeah, that seemed like they didn't really had no clue what they were doing. And I just don't get it. Okay, so first off, all right, so this person, Lani Sarem, is sort of an actress. She's got a couple of acting credits, but maybe that's not really what her prime history has been. It's been as a music manager for bands, some of them very important, such as Blues Traveler, right? Which, as last I checked, kind of insignificant, like at least 8 people like them.
At least. They did 20 years ago anyway. I don't know about anymore, but...
She's cousins with a member of NSYNC. She is the manager of a band that... Well, it used to be the manager of a band that an American Pie actor used to be in. He's in a different one, I think, now. So you've got, like, you got the star side of that, too, right? Which means you could probably... It just seems like you have a network of people who could add some degree of star power behind this. And assuming you haven't burned a lot of bridges, why would you need to do this?
Right, because the quality of the writing... I mean, a lot of people are remarking on the fact that the writing is pretty terrible.
It is.
But... honestly, that's really not a hindrance to making it onto the New York Times bestseller list, let's be honest.
That is true.
So if they had just gone through their collective sort of star power, which granted, you know, is dimmed somewhat, American Pie hasn't been out for years, but there's still enough people within her network that could have boosted this for her, which is how a lot of authors have to operate, right? They use friends and family to sell their book, essentially, but most of them don't have the star power that theoretically Lani Sarem had, and yet they still chose to cheat the system, which is shitty, and I'm really glad that they're getting punished for it. Whether or not the Geek Nation had anything to do with any of this, which they have come out and said that they had nothing to do with this, but this is going... This could either be a crippling blow to their new press, or it works out and all this negative press actually ends up selling the book. I don't know. I loved, too, in addition to all of this crap, that apparently that cover was possibly basically stolen.
It looks like it was. It also, there's some strong suggestion that some of the material in the book itself either was not properly credited in the case of some song lyrics, or... maybe actually stolen from fan fiction online. Apparently someone made some connections between a sort of infamous fan fiction called, I believe it's My Immortals, if I got the...
Yes, My Immortal.
My Immortal, excuse me. Singular, not multiple mortals, because we can't have orgies here. So, but I mean, I don't know if that's true, and even if that's the case, that's like a whole other issue from what's really going on. It just adds to the fuckery that is this situation.
Exactly. But yeah, so that's how you get on the New York Times bestseller list, but it's also how you get taken off pretty quickly.
It's also how you can end up with a 2-star rating on Amazon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, this is not necessarily that you shouldn't necessarily do this, just give a bunch of 1-stars to something just because you don't like the author or how they conducted themselves. But this is what has happened. Tons and tons of 1-star reviews. Some of them maybe have read the book, and some of them, I really doubt that they read the book.
So yeah, but kudos to the YA community, Phil Stamper, and everybody else who dug into this and reported on it and got it taken off the New York Times bestseller list. I'm actually super impressed by, as I think it was the Hollywood Reporter called it, the Nancy Drew footwork of the YA community. It was pretty awesome.
Everything about this just sounds like either Geek Nation really has no idea what it was doing and it walked into a landmine, or they got just conned by somebody who did know what they were doing and just got caught because they weren't very good at it. Because it's in a new field, right? This isn't music management anymore. This is publishing. It's a very different universe.
So yeah, why don't we move on to our next controversy of the past few days. Not so much a controversy as it is a totally shitty move from someone. This is not an uncommon occurrence, but it happened again, and it was a really very specifically extra shitty thing to do. So Sarah Chorn, who just completed writing her first novel,
yay, and friend of the podcast, by the way, she's been on the podcast, she is awesome,
friend of the podcast, Bookworm Blues, yeah, so we're really happy for her. But in the process of talking about this, someone decided to send her a direct message on Twitter saying, "You're too old to write."
I don't even understand that argument.
It is a completely ridiculous argument. It is such a shitty move, and here's why I was extra pissed off about it, and why a lot of other women specifically in the science fiction and fantasy community were pissed off about this. This is not, as I said, not an uncommon accusation, insult, whatever, directed at women in science fiction and fantasy specifically. We'll ignore the fact that men like George R.R. Martin are like 10,000 years old and still writing. You know, that's fine. Nobody gives a crap about that. But women literally hit like 30, and we all are given this idea that our lives and our careers are over and we can't do anything else. We no longer have a valid voice in the community, etc. Now, the reason that this specifically pisses me off is because of the fact that many women, because of societal structures a la women are the caretakers of families, right? Whether or not they're working too, but they're the childbearers and child rearers and home takers.
Yeah, home takers. That's exactly home takers. What they are, Jen.
They take your homes.
They take your home away. Isn't that how feminism works? It's to man hate and take men's homes from them.
Anyway, you get what I'm saying. So many women can't even start writing, really. They don't have the time, the freedom to write, because many women are supporting husbands who are working outside the home or working on their own projects or whatever. So many women cannot start writing until they are in their 40s and 50s, because that's the point that we are finally free, so to speak, of our kids and have the space to write. Yes, a lot of women can write before that. Clearly we have single women and women who are just badass and can write and do everything else at the same time. Kudos to them, but that's generally the trend, or has been the trend. So to level this accusation is extra insulting to me as a stay-at-home mom, right? The implication that I am incapable of creating after a certain age. And it ignores the hundreds of authors that are writing in their 40s, their 50s, and their 60s as women. Completely ignores them. So I was pretty livid about this. Sarah, we are totally behind you. Other women, we are also totally behind you. You can write at any age. Any fucking age. You can get published at any age. What really concerns me is that this is, as I said, not uncommon a viewpoint. I just really genuinely hope that publishers don't also have that impression and reject women who are older based on their point of view of an older woman, potentially. It just worries me.
Yeah, I don't have any expertise for that.
Neither do I.
I do know that in film, broadly speaking, and I think it's starting to change somewhat, but there's been a lot of problem generally with age in general, but mostly targeted at women. Men, too, do struggle, but men, I think, get like a longer tail life, as it were.
Way longer, which is why you have 60-year-old men paired with 20-year-old women as love interests.
Yeah, so it's sort of, I imagine there's some of that hanging over. However, maybe with writing, it's a little easier to get around, because when you show up for an audition in a movie, like, they can tell that you're not 25. Whereas with writing, how are they supposed to know unless they went digging you up online? So maybe in writing, it's a little different, because there is one less barrier in terms of a hindrance. When it comes to assessing the quality of a work, that does not mean that other things aren't also factors, such as assumptions about names and whatnot. But yeah. But again, I don't know, so who knows? I come at this from, I guess, a little bit of a different area, because I'm not a woman, and I have seen this kind of thing lobbed at people who aren't women. I imagine it probably is more common for women for some of the reasons you cited. I can't speak to any expertise on that. I will just accept that to be the case, because I believe that you don't lie to me ever, Jen.
Never.
About anything. Never have ever lied. But like, the thing that really frustrates me is, like, there's this two prongs to the age thing in writing, which is that you get a lot of people who come at it from a different way. They're a creator, and then they compare themselves to other people who started younger than they were, and going like, oh my god, I'm 35, and look at Christopher Paolini, he was published and had a movie deal before he was 20. I'm a loser, right? And it's like, well, but no, because there are all kinds of reasons that people don't start writing. Some people don't discover they're really interested in it, or they set it aside to do their family thing or to have career. Some people, right, they just don't come to it till later in life, that for whatever reason, right? And there's all kinds of examples of famous authors who didn't start till they were 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. And so I feel like That's one side of it. And then there's the other side, which is like this assumption that somehow, like, and it makes no sense with writing especially, but like, you're older, so like, you have nothing to offer here. And I'm like, but like, I'm sorry, but I teach young people. And not all young people know how to express the things they have to offer very effectively. Sometimes that's stuff that comes with living longer and getting practice and so on, right? Not everyone at 15 is a fucking genius. It's just a reality, right? Some people at 15 are dumb as balls, right? That's the way it is, right? I'm pretty sure if I look back at 15-year-old me, man, I was a dumbass. I bet you I was, right? You probably were too, Jen.
I'm turning 40 in...
No, you're not. Shut up.
I totally am. Crazy, right?
You liar. Liar. She's going to be 33. Come on.
I'm turning 40 in like 5 months, right? September, October, November, December. I'm turning 40 in January, right? I was a complete idiot even a year ago. I'm still an idiot, but at least I have 20 additional years of learning every single time I fuck up. And the idea that that wisdom, and I'm not saying I'm wise in any fucking shape, way, or form, but at least those accumulated years of learning, they can have a profound impact on what you are contributing to the field, which is not to say that you should not be writing when you are 18, 19, 20 years old, which is not to say that young people are any less valid.
No, they have a perspective to offer. It's just a different perspective because you're 18, you're not 73.
But they are both exceedingly valuable.
Yes. And I wasn't necessarily thinking even in those terms. I was thinking in terms of, you know, sometimes when you're 18, you can't express yourself very well because you haven't really developed those. And I'm not saying that that's universal, right? There are always exceptions. But like, I just feel like being 30, you know, if you've been practicing, you know, using your craft, broadly speaking, you hopefully are developing, you're becoming better at it, and you're becoming better at expressing yourself, because that's a product of time. You know, otherwise, what would be the point of school, right? If we were still talking like freaking toddlers when we hit 18. There's a progression there. And I don't think the argument holds any water in any context that your age has any bearing on whether you have anything to offer. The product of age doesn't have any bearing on whether or not you are capable of writing a novel. It's just a bullshit argument.
Yeah, it's specious across the board. It's just
a trash argument from somebody who, quite frankly, whoever you are, you should be ashamed of yourself. Like, again, this is the thing that really pisses me off on another level, which is that Sarah, a couple days ago, by the time we're recording, was like really excited to say she had finished writing a novel. Right? She was doing this big project. It was very exciting for her. She'd never done it before. And like, here she is saying, I've done it. I've written a novel. I have finished it. Look at this. I did it. Oh, it's so great. And all these people are coming out and saying, yeah, go Sarah. You're awesome. Woo, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then somebody comes in a DM and just like shits all over her. And it's just like, why would you do that? What? She wrote a fucking novel and let her have it.
Right. Basically, you, sir, are a trash human being.
You are.
Which brings us to our next part of our conversation.
Oh, yeah.
An entire community of trash human beings. Okay, not an entire community, but the ones that are specifically talking about the Space Marine Midwives anthology. Okay, I'm super excited about this. This is an anthology that's coming out through, I think, the Escape Artist podcast. It's Marguerite Kenner and Mer Lafferty are working on this. They just posted their submission guidelines. I'm not sure how long ago, but it was recently.
Feels like almost a month, but...
Was it really?
It feels like it, but I don't know because I don't understand time anymore. What happens when you cross being 30, like we were talking about before?
No. Okay, yeah. It was over a month ago. In July, they posted the guidelines for the anthology, which sounds amazing. So they're looking for midwives who aren't women, Marines who aren't men, non-binary, asexual, and trans perspectives on pregnancy and childbirth, because it's an anthology about bringing life into the world under battle conditions. This is a quote from their submission guidelines. Okay. This is exciting. This is going to be cool. But unfortunately, some members of the military science fiction community, some more trash human beings, have taken issue with this pretty inclusive, intersectional, feminist anthology that they're going for, right? And the things they are saying make me want to, frankly, destroy the entire world. I can't even repeat some of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gone through all of it, but it's really just people who, I think, have just set themselves up to always hate things that are from things that they don't understand or don't want to understand. Like, just by default, if anywhere in the description for a submission guide, like the fine print had transgender in it, or anything vaguely non-quote-unquote standard, big quotey marks, I'm doing it with my finger holes, really big, they would just have a fit. It doesn't matter. It could say everything other than what this one says. Like, it could say, yeah, I want gratuitous rape scenes, and I want gratuitous brutalization of women, but also we want all kinds of, like, non-binary people. Like, yeah, but it makes no sense. They're so hell-bent on hating something because it's talking about something that they don't understand or don't want to understand or have associated with things that they don't understand or don't want to understand. And it seems like what it is it's just this community of people, kind of similar to what we just talked about, that wants to suck joy out of everything for no clear gain, right? Because some of these people presumably don't think that they're transphobic. But yet they're going to sit here and say things like use slurs and so on. And we'll talk about these issues as though like, oh, well, I'm not transphobic, but basically is what they're saying. And it just seems like all they want to do is just burn everything instead of just letting it be. They don't lose anything by this anthology existing. Like if this becomes successful, and let's say like some of them being sarcastic about millions of people reading it. Like, let's be real. How many fucking science fiction novels have millions of readers anyway? No, like none, basically, other than Three Body Problems supposedly has millions of readers in China. But let's be real, outside of Star Wars books, I can't think of any other book that's getting anywhere near even 1 million readers. But like, you don't lose anything. This anthology gets made. It has trans people and non-binary people and
women. God forbid, women as soldiers. I can't believe this is still a fucking conversation. How many years ago did you and I get into that kerfuffle about women in the military? 6 years ago. And it's...
It doesn't even make sense. Like, you could sit there and you could say, like, yeah, men and women are physically different, and so men have some more physical strength generally than women. I'm like, that's great, but it's fucking space opera future. You could solve this in so many ways, it doesn't fucking matter. Also, it doesn't matter how strong you are if it's a goddamn laser pistol that kills you in one blast. Does anyone sit around going, stormtroopers, you can't have a woman stormtrooper, because who fucking cares of running around a goddamn PVC pipe getting shot with laser blasts?
Which, I don't know if anybody knows this, but I'm pretty sure there's no kickback in a laser blast.
No, you just die. People just die and stuff gets fucked up. Like, it's just... Like, it's people taking their arguments about the present and talking about a genre that is often set in the future with things that are different from today or extrapolations on today, and, like, using contemporary arguments to argue about shit that won't matter. In, like, 500 years, nobody's gonna give a fuck about supposed physical differences between men and women. Nobody's gonna give a fuck about transgender people and in the military, because in that time we will have advanced in so many different ways. Who the fuck cares? Seriously, why is this a fucking argument for a genre that's about the future, for fuck's sake? I'm getting angry, sorry.
No, I'm with you, because I'm equally fucking angry, because it's assholes like this fucking fuckstain, excuse my language, sorry not sorry, is that it's people like him that are making our fuckstain of a fucking president come out and ban transgender people from our fucking military. So fuck this guy, fuck anybody who comments on this thread and agreement, and fuck anybody who has a problems with the Space Marine Midwives anthology. Fuck them all, and I'm done.
I would just remind people that if you still want to write pulp-style space opera and military SF, you still can. Transgender people aren't coming to take away your pulp heroes. They're not. Go write it. And, you know, maybe don't shit on other people's parade. An idea?
I think we've gotten some of our rant out this week. So...
Oh, no, I got one more. Can I just give one more? Because I remember telling you this off podcast, the person that said the most inclusive areas are always the most heavily censored. And when you look at what the actual guidelines are, what this guy is literally saying is, to be inclusive, you should have gratuitous violence and gratuitous rape for no point other than for titillation. That's literally what that guy's arguing, if you take that as being an actual response to what is in the guidelines. Now, to be honest, he probably didn't actually read the guidelines. He probably skimmed it and looked for the key terms like censorship. But still, it's like, yeah, but honey, like, they're not saying you can't have stories with rape in it. They just don't want you to have rape because you think it's sexy.
Right. Furthermore, I would point out that this literally says nothing about who should submit.
No. But see, here's the thing. Since it's an intersectional feminist book, that means that white males are not allowed to write fiction anymore.
Oh, right.
That's
of
how
course,
this works.
I forgot. My
and
bad.
You've forgotten, like, this is why, like, every feminist needs to get their feminist handbook and really read the rules, because it's section 3, paragraph B, sentence 3. It says specifically, any guideline that says intersectional feminist in it immediately means that no white males are allowed to write any more books ever again.
No straight white male. No cisgender straight white males are allowed to write ever again if anything that says intersectional feminism exists.
Yeah, that was an amendment made. I forgot. That's from a 2014 amendment. My edition is a little old because I have to re-up this year to make sure to get the new edition. So sort of like the MLA, every time you sign up, you get a book. Yeah. So, but, you know, I mean, so I understand, Jen, why they're really upset, because this is obviously what tyranny is the women's are...
It's white genocide, Sean.
It's white cis male het genocide. They're coming for us all, including me, because apparently...
Frankly, as a feminist, I think you just need to get off this podcast, actually.
God, you're right. You're right, because intersectional feminism obviously says that men can't talk.
So, Sean is going to be leaving. I will record the rest of this podcast for him, and he will never, ever exist ever again. He's just actually going to poof out of existence as he stops talking.
In case it's not clear, we're being super sarcastic.
Super sarcastic.
This is in no way reality. I'm just pointing out that the arguments that are making are monumentally stupid. They ignore what the guidelines are actually saying, and they're being upset over something that you frankly shouldn't be upset about, not least of all because... it is an anthology guideline, which means it's going to have restrictions. Like, you don't go to the New York Times and submit an erotica novel.
No, but you can buy their bestseller.
But you can't buy their bestseller. That's true.
But anyway, I think we've done enough ranting for today. So let's get to our signal booth. I'm going to let you go first.
Okay, so my first boost is actually for Silvia Moreno-Garcia's Indiegogo campaign for Prime Meridian, which is a novella set in a sort of near future Mexico City, which for folks who have read some of her other works, such as Signal to Noise, probably will be a little bit excited because Signal to Noise is also set in Mexico City, which is sinking, by the way. So you should go support it. As of this recording, they got 8 days left and about $3,500 is on it. So they're trying to get to $5,000. But I really recommend supporting a really fantastic writer. We've interviewed Silvia before and they are pretty much fantastic and amazing, and you should just support everything they do. So my second one is a fun little book that came in the mail that I know literally nothing about, but I don't care because given the content of this conversation today, it's so perfect. I was so excited when I opened it. So the book is called An Excess Male. That is correct. An Excess Male by Maggie Shen King, who is a Taiwanese, I think just Taiwanese author. It looks fantastic. When I have glanced through the book, there is literally a character who is just 2X chromosomes. That's his name. And I basically am just in love with everything about this book, because it's just wonderful. And you should all go buy it and check it out. So it's An Excess Male by Maggie Shen King. It is via Harper Voyager. It is coming out. I think it's already technically out. So go get it. All right, Jen, what about you?
So I'm going to do another fundraiser is going on right now, which is Strange Horizons is doing their annual fund drive right now. Links in the show notes, as usual. I'm really excited about this. I really want them to get to the $20,000 level specifically, but they've got some fun gifts as part of the campaign. And then specifically, if they raise $17,000, they're going to do a special issue on Arabic science fiction and fantasy. And then at $20,000, They're going to be doing one from the southeastern United States. Some people might know my family's from Mississippi, so I have kind of like a soft spot in my heart for southern writing. But this one will specifically be featuring Black, Indigenous, and people of color writers from the southeastern U.S. So let's get them to at least $20,000, hopefully more. Strange Horizons is a great magazine, and everybody should read what is in there and help support them. My second one is my favorite speculative fiction from this year, frankly. And it's bizarre and unusual, and everybody should probably nominate it for a Hugo because it's fucking genius. And that is 17,776, which is the story of what football will look like in the future. And I can hear you thinking, football, Jen? But I don't give a shit about football. Here's the thing. Neither do I. I hate football. I'm really just not interested in the slightest bit whatsoever. But 17,776 takes a look at our planet 15,000 years after humanity has randomly decided to live forever. No children are born. And it's what do people do with their time? And Americans are still playing football, but some very interesting iterations of football that you just have to read to find out about. It's amazing. And it's a sort of mixed media presentation. I will be nominating it for Hugo in I don't know which category, but I will figure that out because it's just, it's genius. It's great sort of examination of what it is to be human. I just loved it. So check that out. It's on sbnation.com, 17,776, a football story. So those are my boosts. And yeah, I guess that's it. Thank you everyone for joining us again on Signal Boost. We hope you enjoyed it. Please support us on Patreon.
Yep. And keep the white males out. And on that note, awkward ending. And scene. Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Cronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.